This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Today, I'm joined by many of my colleagues, ministers whose bills are on track for passage by the House of Commons. It is an impressive list. We expect to have 15 bills passed in this House in 14 weeks.
Welcome back to the Law Bites podcast. Parliament adjourned for the summer this past week, meaning that both the House of Commons and the Senate are largely on hold until mid-September. This podcast focuses intensively on legislative and policy developments from a digital perspective, and with another parliamentary year in the books, I thought it would be useful to take a look back and take stock of where things stand. The government unsurprisingly tried to talk up its accomplishments, but on the digital policy front, there was relatively little to promote. There are some bills that have a real shot at becoming law, either later this year or early in 2025, but its most high-profile proposed legislation has barely moved, and the likelihood that they become law is quickly diminishing. Let's start with the postscript on the two bills that took center stage last year, Bills C-11 and C-18, the Online Streaming Act and the Online News Act. Listeners may recall that the Online Streaming Act, Bill C-11, passed back in April 2023. It's now at the CRTC, and there's been a considerable number of developments. From a governmental perspective, the last major step it took was to issue a policy direction to the CRTC, identifying how it would like to see the legislation interpreted. That policy direction was finalized in November of 2023. And as promised by the government, it excludes user content from the ambit of regulation. The CRTC didn't wait for the policy direction, however. It moved quickly to begin to address the myriad of issues that arise as part of this legislation, starting first with a series of hearings in the summer of 2023 involving the question of registration requirements for online streaming services, which also included questions around registration fees that those services might be required to pay. Now, even that decision has proven somewhat controversial, as Google in particular has challenged the decision involving registration fees in court. And as I noted in a recent post, as part of that litigation, which is still at a relatively early stage, the government acknowledges that the legislation as drafted covers regulating user content, something that for many, many months, government officials, ministers, and others kept insisting were outside of the legislation itself. The CRTC's major issue, though, didn't really involve the registration requirements, but rather focused on mandatory payments by internet streaming services. It's worth noting that there are a wide range of issues the CRTC has to address as part of Bill C-11. Everything from what counts as Canadian content, with the prospect of a modernized definition for CanCon, questions around discoverability and promotion of Canadian content, which gets us into issues around algorithmic regulation. But the CRTC chose to start in some ways at the very end of the process by first identifying what it thinks internet streaming services must pay as a base contribution to help support Canadian content and a whole series of different programs. It held fairly lengthy hearings, 3 weeks worth of hearings in December of 2023. I appeared as a witness during those hearings, and it heard from a wide range of stakeholders, with those that would be beneficiaries of new money arguing for, well, more money. In fact, some noted that the government had talked up the possibility of $1 billion in new money and so wanted contributions that measured up to that number. Others highlighted the potential costs and implications of significant new mandatory payments, and at a minimum argued that the CRTC ought to hold off until it had addressed many of the other related policy issues. CRTC acknowledges that this is all going to take quite a lot of time. In fact, as part of its regulatory plan, or at least its updated regulatory plan, the CRTC now says that this could run as far as 2026 before it's concluded all the various issues, and that doesn't even account for the possibility of even more court filings and appeals that may arise from the different decisions. In any event, it was December 2023 when we had the first really big hearing around Bill C-11. There was, I should note, in the background in 2024, a number of meetings that took place around CanCon, but there's been relatively little that's been taking place in the broad public spotlight. And the core issue that people were waiting for was, in fact, its first ruling around mandatory payments, which came in very early June. The first few days of June was when that decision came forward, with the CRTC coming to the conclusion that internet streaming services that generate at least $25 million in revenue in Canada would be required to make these payments, and the payments that they've identified work out to about 5% of their Canadian revenues. Now, whether you're a video streaming service like a Netflix or a Disney, or an audio streaming service like a Spotify, you face the prospect of these payments. How those payments are broken up, where they go, differ depending on the particular kind of content. But there's a lot of slicing that takes place, with a certain amount of funding going to the Canada Media Fund, other pieces of funding going to support Indigenous film and television productions, some funding going towards news, some going towards BIPOC productions. So the CRTC's identified a whole series of policy objectives and wants to see some amount of the money going in each of those different directions. That's their initial decision. I think it's fair to say that we've started to see some of the reactions to the decision, and there's quite a lot of concern about what it will mean. From a consumer perspective, it seems increasingly likely that the increased costs will ultimately be passed along to consumers. That may be particularly true in the case of audio streaming services like Spotify, which already operate with relatively thin margins. And so being required to hand over 5% of their Canadian revenues for these other policy objectives is likely going to increase in simply an increased cost for consumers to account for those fees. In the case of video streaming services, some may choose to try to pass on those fees. Others may rethink some of their existing investment in film and television production in Canada to account for some of those fees. And there may be yet other services that take a look at that $25 million threshold and begin to view it as a cap, recognizing that if they fall below that threshold, at least for now, it starts getting very expensive in Canada to operate if you exceed past that threshold, facing more than $1 million in additional fees effectively once you tip over that particular number. And so many either deliberately trying to stay small or looking at the Canadian market as a market to be avoided, or at least recognizing that there are costs that may be incurred in Canada from a regulatory perspective that aren't found elsewhere. Look for this issue to continue to play out. We've already seen requests or pleas to the Heritage Minister to intervene. That seems unlikely at this stage, but the issue certainly isn't over. It's certainly possible that we may see challenges from a trade perspective. We could see court challenges, and then certainly the marketplace impact of some of these decisions is going to play out likely during the rest of 2024. So that's Bill C-11. Bill C-18, the Online News Act, a year ago at this time was just wrapping up in the House of Commons. So it passed both the House and the Senate in late June. And at the time, the two big internet platforms that were subject to the legislation, Meta and Google, both said that the legislation as structured was unworkable and that they were likely to block news links or simply remove news links from their available search results in the case of Google. The government chose to target Meta in terms of much of the criticism. And in fact, Meta held strong throughout. They'd been consistent from the very introduction of the legislation that legislation premised on mandated payments for links was unworkable. And if faced with that form of legislation, they would simply stop linking to news. That began to take effect in the summer of 2023, nearly a year ago, and in fact has remained in place ever since. And so links on both Meta's Facebook and Instagram platforms to news no longer resolve. And that's true not just for Canadian news services, but for services around the world. There have been some efforts to try to circumvent or get around the ban on news links, sometimes people posting screenshots of news. Remains to be seen whether or not the CRTC will take up that issue and whether or not that is viewed as facilitating access to news. It seems that Meta has made it very clear that they simply do not want to facilitate access to news and will take steps to ensure that they do not do so. And the way they comply with the legislation is simply to block news links for Canadian users on the platform. Some have noted that this is part of a larger shift for the company globally, where it has been de-emphasizing the importance of news, but it's really only in Canada at the moment that news links are actually fully blocked as a result of the legislation. I think it's also notable that initial reports suggested that from a Facebook perspective, it's had relatively little impact on the number of users or the amount of engagement on the platform, effectively confirming something that the company had maintained throughout the legislative process, namely that news was highly substitutable and that, in fact, people would spend time on the platform doing other things other than clicking on news links or viewing commentary on news if that ceased to exist on the platform. Well, Facebook has found that the removal of news links hasn't had a major impact on user experience. The same can't be said for many news outlets who have found that there's been a significant decrease in traffic. The percentage of impact increases, especially for some of the smaller, more innovative players that viewed social media as being a core part of their growth strategy. Those companies have often been hit pretty hard, and some have looked towards things like newsletters or other mechanisms to try to address some of the decline in traffic, but many will readily admit that there has been a decline in traffic. And moreover, for those entities that had deals with Facebook or with Meta as part of their support for journalism in Canada, those deals have come to an end as the company has exited the news market in Canada. The Google saga was more drawn out. The government in 2023, during the parliamentary session, continued to be engaged, first with draft regulations interpreting the legislation that were issued in September of 2023, when it became clear that those regulations were still facing opposition from Google and that many of the news outlets were becoming increasingly concerned that both Meta and Google would exit the news market in Canada. The government really tossed aside many of its core principles in this legislation. They had said as part of Bill C-18, as part of the Online News Act, that they would not be negotiating directly with the companies. This was up to the various stakeholders to engage in negotiation. The government ultimately did do the negotiating on behalf of news outlets. They ultimately also tossed aside claims that they would not get involved in allocations by coming up with a deal that Google was agreeable to $100 million in money that would be distributed, and the government identified how it would be distributed, with 7% to the CBC, 30% to broadcasters, and the remainder, 63%, to news outlets, digital and traditional print outlets. The effect of that deal may be less than meets the eye. It's pretty clear that certainly some of the news outlets are going to get a fair amount on a per journalist basis, though the amount that Google was already spending, which has been rumored to be in the tens of millions of dollars as part of deals it had with many of the same outlets that are now beneficiaries of this legislation, that money is being rolled into the $100 million. So it's quite clear that it is not $100 million in new money. There is also a cost to administer all of this. Looks like it will be capped at 2% of the $100 million or $2 million to administer the system. In fact, that issue, the question of administration of the system, is the new, most controversial aspect of this legislation. As part of the deal with Google, which took the form of a bespoke piece of regulation that applied exclusively to Google, so long as Google met these standards and it was only available to the entity that was the largest search engine with the most amount of digital ad revenue in Canada, which of course is Google, so long as they met certain requirements, they would be eligible for an exemption by the CRTC. Now, Google insisted that as part of the negotiations for this, that the negotiations would take place with a single entity on behalf of all the various news outlets. So anyone who is eligible remains eligible, but there'd be a single point of negotiation, essentially establishing a new collective to operate on behalf of all the various news outlets. Behind the scenes, it started with the major lobby groups, News Media Canada, the Canadian Association of Broadcasters, and the CBC, pulling together a proposal to become that entity. But when many of the independents felt that they were being largely sidelined from that process, they stepped in and created a Counter Collective. And in fact, in the last few weeks, Google announced that it had selected the Independent Collective to represent all news outlets for the negotiations. That has resulted in a significant amount of backlash from the large players. They've asked the CRTC to impose a whole series of conditions on this new collective. It's clear that there is a very limited amount of trust. The new collective has in turn responded by assuring that there is a cap on spending. That would be 2% of the revenue, as I said, about $2 million. The large lobby groups were looking for even tighter spending. They talked about 0.5% or $500,000, which seemed entirely unrealistic to run a collective of this nature, given some of the expectations and requirements that are associated with running this system, with adjudicating potential disputes and engaging in some amount of interpretation of some of the rules. Although, as many have noted, many of the rules are fairly clearly set out either in the legislation or even more by way of regulation. And then the CRTC is going to play a role here as well. So there's some amount of debate as to how much power the collective actually has. It clearly has some, and certainly the need for at least a broadly representative collective is one that one can well understand why many stakeholders would want to see that happen and why they might have been concerned with a proposal that excluded many of the independent players from some of that decision-making process. So some of these questions are still playing out. It will be up to the CRTC to ultimately grant some of these approvals. Those are expected in the weeks ahead. That's in some ways the postscript to Bill C-11 and C-18 as they stand now. Let's turn to the marquee bills for this past year. Those would include Bill C-27 on privacy, Bill C-63 on online harms, Bill C-69, which is the Budget Implementation Act, which includes within it the start of a digital services tax, Bill S-210, legislation that involves mandated age verification for accessing pornography sites, and Bill C-26, which involves cybersecurity and has privacy and telecom-related elements to it. It's worth noting that at least some of these bills predate this parliamentary session. C-27 has been around now for a couple of years, so too for C-26 and for S-210. It's really only C-63 and C-69 that are new. C-69 new because it's a new budget. C-63, the online harms bill, which has been percolating in the background for a very long time, but finally was introduced by the government in February of 2024. Now, each of these pieces of legislation has been the subject of at least one, oftentimes multiple podcast episodes over the last year. So rather than going into great detail about any of them, I'd encourage listeners who are interested to go back because there's some really great podcasts on these issues that break down many of their implications. I want to use this opportunity to talk about what took place on each of those bills over the past year and where things stand now. I'll start with Bill C-27, which is the Privacy and AI Bill. Hearings on that bill, after having been introduced more than a year earlier, started back in the fall of 2023 and continued to run for many months until the early spring of 2024. The committee started first with the privacy elements of the legislation and then gradually shifted to AI. I think that created some significant complications in terms of the approach because witnesses were typically invited just once. And so if you were invited early in the process, and that would include me, I appeared fairly early in the process, you were focused on privacy because that's what the committee was focused on. If you were invited later on, you were focused on AI. And while there may be some witnesses whose expertise lay primarily in privacy or in AI, there were plenty of people who had much to say about both of those issues. But because the government has brought both of these pieces of legislation together in one, it created a scenario whereby the committee hearings really didn't allow for the kind of deep dive that one would look for in both of these pieces of legislation. There was also an interesting issue very early on in the hearings when the responsible minister, I said Minister François-Philippe Champagne, came to committee and indicated right off the top that the government was ready to move ahead with a whole series of changes. Having taken almost a year to get to committee, they'd been hearing a considerable amount of feedback, and he indicated that there were a lot of changes coming. He described some of those changes, but then when asked to provide the actual text of the changes so that witnesses in the committee were actually dealing with where the bill was headed toward, he indicated he wasn't willing to do that. He would only make the actual text available at the very end of the hearing process, once the committee moved to clause-by-clause review of the legislation. That sparked, I think, a considerable amount of concern, certainly from within the committee, and I think for many others that were scheduled to appear before the committee and recognize that their comments might have been rendered largely irrelevant even at the time they were making them, if the government was already planning to address those issues or make significant changes. Ultimately, the minister and the government relented, providing first the specifics around privacy and later some of the specifics around AI. Though even with those specifics, it is the case with this legislation, as we find with some of the other legislation, that there is still a lot to be determined later, a lot that has been left for regulation. So extensive hearings were held. Then in the spring of 2024, the committee began the process of its clause-by-clause review, whereby it quite literally goes clause-by-clause through the legislation, considers various proposed amendments from the different parties, engage in debate, and potentially either adopt the amendments or reject them, ultimately adopt each clause and continue through that process. Now, this process has been very, very slow. The committee is still at the privacy portion of the legislation. It hasn't begun to touch the AI portion. And in fact, the committee stopped the clause-by-clause review at the end of May as it began to deal with some other issues in the final few weeks of the House of Commons session. And so we enter the summer with clause-by-clause having been underway for several months now, still at the privacy side of this bill with many proposed amendments to AI yet to come. That suggests that this is going to run for a while into the fall. And assuming that it takes roughly the fall to get through this legislation, which is based at least on the current speed, seems pretty likely. The bill then really doesn't even head to the Senate potentially until 2025. And given the likelihood of an election at the latest in the fall of 2025, there are increased doubts that this legislation, which has been around now for years, is actually going to pass, because there are, I think, growing concerns that the clock is going to run out unless there is a willingness to really expedite the hearings that take place at the Senate, assuming this gets through the House. Now, the same is roughly true for Bill C-63, the Online Harms Act. And even though that legislation was only introduced in February of this year, it also has not moved very quickly. It isn't even at committee just yet. And so the possibility that it becomes legislation in light of the necessity for extensive hearings on that bill, which also includes not only the responsibility of the internet platforms with respect to online harms, essentially what is the core of the Online Harms Act, but also includes criminal code provisions and Human Rights Act provisions. I think we are once again looking at very extensive hearings that touch on a number of different aspects of this legislation, given that it kind of brings together several different kinds of legislation into one. And at this stage, this bill is still just barely entered into debate at second reading in the House. So I think it was fairly clear almost immediately, or at least within weeks of people having taken the time to examine the legislation, that the Justice Minister, Arif Virani, had overstepped, and a piece of legislation that was likely to have received broad support from many, if not all of the parties, at least if limited to issues around identifiable harms and the responsibility and liability of internet platforms, suddenly had become far more controversial because of the inclusion of the Criminal Code and Human Rights Act provisions. And so not much happened on this legislation other than some amount of public debate for many months. It was only very late in the House session, and towards the very, very end on a Friday, when the government moved ahead with debate at second reading. So that's the first real full debate around the bill in the House of Commons. Like, the initial read from all the various opposition parties is that there is wide support for splitting the bill in half, for moving ahead specifically with the online harms portion, but carving out the Criminal Code and Human Rights Act provisions. Indeed, even if they don't carve it out directly at the House level, once it goes to study, there is certainly some desire to find some mechanism to ensure that the online harms piece, the piece dealing with the platforms, gets dealt with and expedited, whereas the other issues are subject to a more fulsome discussion and debate separate from the internet piece of this legislation. Now, that's where this bill stands right now. A little bit of debate at second reading in the House, and that's basically it, with all opposition parties expressing some support for splitting this bill in two. At this stage, it seems likely that the debate will resume in the fall. I think it ultimately does get to committee. But if we look at the calendar, it becomes even more difficult to envision a process whereby there are the much-needed extensive hearings on this legislation. It then goes through its own clause-by-clause review, perhaps with the whole legislation, perhaps just with the online harms piece, and then goes back to the House for approval and then goes to the Senate for a similar review with hearings and the like. Given the amount of time that is left in the current government before an election, passing Bill C-63 may be a challenge as well. It is a challenge right now, and I think there are many who are raising the question as to whether or not that legislation will pass. One piece of legislation that has passed, but that is likely to spark a fair amount of discussion and controversy very soon, as soon as in the next week or two, is Bill C-69, which is the Budget Implementation Bill. Now, it's notable specifically because it includes an element that kickstarts the digital services tax, the DST, which the government has been raising now for several years as a possibility. I've covered this on the podcast now for a number of years. Government had been holding off for some time on a DST, in part because there is an international agreement at the OECD, which is viewed, I think, by just about everyone as a preferable approach to deal with this question, which involves a special levy on large multinational companies. Tech companies tend to be the focus of this, but it's not limited exclusively to tech companies. And it envisions specifically payments, an additional levy on revenues that might come from digital advertising or running digital platforms and a series of other kinds of revenue sources that take place domestically. The specific percentages and how they apply are still a little bit up in the air. We should know more within the next week or two. Some expectation that we will see 3% is kind of the standard that you see generally, and we'll see if that applies broadly or whether or not the government tinkers a little bit with some of the percentages and the required payments. At the moment, it will be a retroactive tax, so it will go back to 2022 in terms of payments that are required. So we are talking about sizable amounts of money, hundreds of millions or billions of dollars potentially in new revenue is what the government is hoping for from this DST. Because of the revenues that are involved, we are starting to see a growing backlash against it. It's not surprisingly coming from many of the tech companies, but it's not just limited to tech companies, from the business community more broadly, chambers of commerce, retailers, and others. All concerned that at the end of the day, these new fees, these new taxes will effectively be passed along to businesses or to consumers in terms of the costs that they face, whether for advertising and for use of platforms. And so it's simply going to increase costs. And if these are not implemented in an equivalent fashion, it may actually have competitive effects, negative competitive effects on Canadian businesses. The U.S., in many other circumstances, has talked about the possibility of retaliatory tariffs against countries that impose DSTs. The same is true here. So far, it appears that the Canadian government doesn't take those threats particularly seriously. It doesn't seem all that concerned that the U.S. would, in fact, follow through with retaliatory tariffs. If we're talking about a lot of money at stake, especially in the midst of a U.S. presidential election, there is certainly some amount of risk that Canada moving ahead with this, especially at this time, may find that whatever revenues get collected through a DST may be offset to a certain extent by way of retaliatory tariffs. Remains to be seen, but it's something that is going to play out quite soon. Looks like it could play out as soon as this summer. Two other bills that are closer to completion, first being Bill S-210. This is the bill that has been discussed on a number of occasions on this podcast. It involves the establishment of mandatory age verification for accessing adult sites or pornography sites. The concerns with it are wide-ranging, including the privacy implications of the technologies that would be used to allow for mandated age verification, the broad scope of coverage of this legislation into not just pornography sites, but to streaming services like Netflix, to search engines, to chat boards like Reddit, to social media like Twitter or X. The absence of thresholds in the legislation means that it applies very broadly. This legislation passed in the Senate back in April of 2023. It took quite a long time till December of 2023 before it finally started making its way through the House. Somewhat surprisingly, the legislation was supported by the conservatives, who previously had been all in on opposing internet regulation and freedom of expression online, and yet they became the primary proponent of this legislation, supported by the NDP and the Bloc and a handful of Liberal MPs. But interestingly, the vast majority of government MPs, of Liberal MPs, opposed the legislation and continued to do so throughout the process. Now, even after it made its way to the House in December 2023, it took a long time to get to committee until May of 2024. Once it made it to committee, it was subject to a filibuster. And so there were several days that were allocated to the bill in which no actual hearings around the legislation were actually conducted. By the time the filibuster came to an end, it was just one day that was devoted to this legislation, with Senator Julie Melville Deschênes, who was the sponsor and creator of the bill in the Senate, the Privacy Commissioner of Canada, and department officials from Canadian Heritage appearing. There were no other witnesses and no further hearings. And instead, the bill ultimately goes back to the House unamended with no further debate. I recently ran a podcast in which I provided what would have been my opening statement, along with some of my responses to potential questions that might have come from MPs. In any event, the bill is now back in the House. There are two votes left, a vote to approve the bill as coming back from committee, and then the third reading vote. That did not happen before the House rose for the summer, so that is expected in the fall. And there is some uncertainty as to how things will break down. It certainly seems likely the government will oppose. They've been pretty steadfast in highlighting their concerns with the legislation, both from a privacy perspective, but also in terms of its overbreadth. It seems likely, at least at this stage, the conservatives will continue to support the legislation. The big question is whether or not one of the other two opposition parties, the Bloc or the NDP, whether one of the two will break away their previous support and we'll see this bill die and defeated in a final vote, or whether or not it will actually become law. So still a real possibility, something that will happen at some point in time in the fall. Finally, there is Bill C-26. It's legislation that I have covered on this podcast. It doesn't get as much attention, but there are important implications for both privacy, cybersecurity, as well as telecom infrastructure within that legislation. It too was around for several years, going back to legislation that was introduced by Marco Mendicino, who is no longer the minister. He's no longer in cabinet. It took a very long time as part of that process and passed in the House of Commons in the very final week. In fact, in the very final days of the House of Commons before breaking for the summer. So it is now shifted to the Senate. One can expect that there will be some hearings on this legislation in the Senate, but given that it is at least at the Senate now, assuming that there's still a full fall and spring of timeline in the parliamentary calendar into 2025, there is certainly enough time to hold hearings and address the legislation and potentially see it passed. So that's the main pieces of legislation. I guess very quickly, and in conclusion, there is, of course, other policy issues from a digital perspective playing themselves out within the federal government. From a copyright perspective, there's certainly some notable cases. Just last week, we talked about the Blacklock's case involving fair dealing and passwords and anti-circumvention rules. But from a government perspective, the core issue they've been facing has to do with copyright and generative AI. There have been some pressure on the government to entertain the possibility of legislative reform. They held a consultation that wrapped up in January of 2024. And just in the last few days, the departments released the submissions they received, nearly 100 submissions from a wide range of stakeholders on all sides of this issue and a whole series of academics, myself included. Government says it will still be releasing a What We Heard report, though people certainly have the ability to now see what in fact they heard as part of that process. It seems very unlikely government will move ahead with legislative reform in this area at this stage, given where we are at. But they are obviously beginning to build the policy brief around this issue, should they decide to actually move ahead. There have been also ongoing concerns around access to information and the need for reform to our access to information laws. Government is now talking about another review with the prospect later of legislation, more comprehensive legislation. So some of the big changes people are looking for are not going to come during the current parliament. And finally, the government was grappling with things around competition law, which included both large grocery chains, but also addressed some of the concerns that have arisen in the context of wireless pricing and communications pricing more broadly. The government has been declaring victory on that front, talking about some of the declines in pricing that they perceive that have taken place. It's an issue that has also been covered on this podcast, as the reality is a bit more complex than is sometimes presented. So that's much of what took place in the House at the federal level, as well as within the Senate. There's, of course, also activities worth noting at the provincial level. We've had legislation in Ontario on cybersecurity and AI that I'll be looking at in a future podcast. British Columbia has been active on social media issues. Quebec, of course, active on privacy-related issues. So certainly notable things taking place there, but most of the focus still tends to be from a digital policy perspective at the federal level, where there's lots of legislative proposals, but experience over the last number of years suggests that getting this through and then dealing with all the regulatory aftermath is a very, very lengthy process, certainly not something that moves at digital speed. So that's that for the past parliamentary year, from fall 2023 until the spring summer of 2024. Parliament is now on a break, but this podcast will take only the occasional break. There'll be a few weeks that are taken off over the course of the summer, including next week for the Canada Day long weekend, but we'll continue because there are still many, many issues to talk about. Have a great long weekend, and we'll see you again soon. That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter @LawBitesPod or Michael Geist @MGeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe via RSS at Apple Podcast, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for the clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes for this episode at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.